Hello and namaste. I'm Peter Furco, and this is Peter's podcast, where we talk about real yoga, actual happiness, and deep living. Thanks for joining me. Today I have a treat for myself and a lot of New York yogis. I got to speak with my former trainee and substitute teacher of choice, Rebecca Oliveira. Rebecca is a mom, beloved yoga teacher, and a weaver, newly living in New Mexico. Rebecca taught and practiced at Ishta Yoga and at Hosh Yoga, and she designed fabric for Calvin Klein while living in New York. She headed out west in 2016 and is now living in Albuquerque. We talk about her return to yoga practice and teaching after having a baby, and about living her yoga through motherhood. We had to rely on the internet connection to record, so please pardon the occasional audio irregularities. Enjoy. Hi, Rebecca.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I saw pictures of Albuquerque on your Instagram today. It looks gorgeous.
It is. It's much prettier than I ever imagined it was going to be, which is a nice surprise.
Yeah. And you are right in the city?
We are just, yeah, kind of. We're actually on the Air Force Base, which is in the city in Albuquerque, which is the only reason we actually wanted to live on base. But we can see the mountains, and we're really near the nice neighborhood, so it's actually a perfect location if a little cookie cutter. But
yeah.
Otherwise, great.
Well, I can imagine that it would be a little cookie cutter being a base, but yeah. But you have those gorgeous mountains. Yes. What are they called? Sandia?
The Sandias, yeah. Yeah. And they kind of change from pink to blue. And as they go blue, the sky goes pink. It's really beautiful every evening.
Yeah. We were just deciding on colors for our new apartment, and we were thinking of those exact colors, you know, sometimes pink, sometimes blue. Uh-huh. So.
Okay.
Yeah. We can talk about all kinds of things, but one of the things I wanted to talk about was the transition that you got to go through, going from being a yoga teacher who was teaching all the time to be as well as having a regular job, to being a mom and having all of the responsibilities of taking care of your baby and figuring out how do I still maintain a yoga practice, and just love to know a little bit how that's worked for you.
Yeah, it's so just about everything in my life changed. Like, so I was working a full-time job teaching a lot of yoga. I didn't have a baby. And then I was living in a completely different place without a job with a baby. And my yoga practice was kind of, I want to say it was, to a point at least, it was the one steadying thing.
Wow.
Like, I would always do my yoga practice. When she was actually born, that changed a little.
Uh-huh.
You know, so through my pregnancy, that was the thing that kept me kind of sane, helped me meet people and integrate into a new community and deal with being pregnant.
And first off, you were in Texas.
I was in Texas, in San Antonio, Texas. Yeah. So that kept everything steady then. And then once she was born, it's been, my yoga practice has changed quite dramatically, quite dramatically. I used to quite pride myself on being someone who would leave a class with someone telling me like how beautiful my practice is. And I only realized like how much that was part of my practice till I didn't have it anymore.
Iris just piped in over the baby monitor, so we took a brief pause. We're going to pick up where we left off.
So after I had Iris, A, I couldn't practice for a while and my practice had been very different. So the first time I went to try and do a chaturanga again, I belly flopped. So my asana practice, I know, and it was a complete surprise to me. I don't know why it should have been a surprise. My abdominal muscles have definitely changed. Yeah. But, you know, so my asana practice changed immensely and it's still kind of hit or miss depending on how ill she is, how much she naps. So sometimes I can fit in a full asana practice. Sometimes I can go to a really nice class. Sometimes I do a few stretches and that's my asana practice. But more importantly, I think I've come to rely on, my breathing practice and my mindfulness. Since having her, yeah, my asana changed dramatically. I couldn't do a chaturanga anymore. It was like a starting from scratch thing. Although it was a quicker journey to get back up there, but it was quite humbling, the whole thing, and it just made me feel very different about my asana practice post pregnancy. In terms of what I rely on more as my yoga practice now, it does tend to be being more mindful. Like I have a mindfulness practice. It doesn't always take place in a seated meditation. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it might be when I'm nursing her, and that is my time to just be with her and be with in the moment. And it's also a time when I really notice if I'm distracted. So any time with her is like that. Like my day is infinitely worse if I'm not in the moment. So that's where I feel my yoga practice helps in being a new mom.
I think that the yoga, we get kind of fixed ideas about it, but Wendy and I talk about this all the time, that it's a way of living. And not just a particular piece of practice, and so it totally makes sense to me that having had an intense practice for a long time before you had Iris is like the preparation for having Iris and living in the moment and being able to stay with that, and keep your equanimity.
Yeah, and having the awareness to know when I'm not in the moment, because it happens quite often, especially as I spend most of my day alone with her. There are definite times when I'm distracted and when I am not in the moment, when I haven't got patience, because when you're not in the most moment, it's very easy to be very impatient for another moment. And so that's when I rely on the yoga practice, and the yoga practice reminds me to rely on it.
That's great. You have two more days to get in on the early bird price for Yoga and the Art of Living Creatively, a 5-day retreat this summer in France with Wendy Newton, Ulrika Norbury, and me. See peterfurco.com for details. You're not going to want to miss this one.
Nous allons en France. Où? En France? Vraiment? Oui, nous allons en France. Venez avec nous, en France.
And you've done some Baby and Me kinds of classes or along the way?
I did. I did a few in San Antonio before I left there. Fun-ish? Yeah, fun. I know. I taught one once, which was really fun. It can be really different depending on how the class is structured. Sometimes, and depending what the baby does. Like the first time I took Iris to a Baby and Me class, she slept through the whole class and I got to do a yoga practice. So that was beautiful.
Right.
But you'll look at the woman next to you who is nursing her baby the whole time or changing her baby or wandering around the room trying to comfort her baby the whole time. So it's, everything when you've had a baby is uncertain.
Yes. Everything is focused on the baby.
Yeah, yeah. They're a big master.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, she's my guru now.
Right, right. Well, we talk about how you can't change circumstances, right? And that's major circumstances.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, she and they change all the time. So that's why my yoga practice has to change.
Right.
You know, I still need a physical practice, but it might not be in the same form as it used to be.
Right.
And as consistent. I am jealous of the mums who manage to do it so consistently. I haven't got that yet. I think I have for a while, and then she changes her schedule, so it's all up in the air.
Right.
Everything changes. The only certainty.
Yes, yes. And your husband Pedro is a meditator. How's his practice been?
His practice has not been so good, I think, since we've moved here. He's studying for exams, and it would help him, but he's a bit frazzled as well, I think. Mm-hmm. Everyone finds their groove in different ways.
Right, right.
But yeah.
And you two share some parenting jobs.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Although I stay home with her, so I just through that, as much as he'd like to be present and be an equal parent, just through the fact that I'm at home with her most of the time means I do the bunch.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a whole different
right
mindset.
Was it a surprise or you were?
Yeah, well, not having her, but the change, the change, you know, I think everyone goes into parenthood thinking it doesn't matter how many people tell you that your life is going to change and you won't have time to do all these other things as well as being a parent, and you brush them all aside because you think you're different. And then, you know, you have a baby and you realize more than anything, the only thing you want is sleep. So all those other things that you were going to do while you were staying at home all day with your baby don't happen. Uh-huh. And you realize you're not really that different to everyone else. Uh-huh. But yeah, I find the one thing that happens around that time when you're a new parent and you're sleep deprived and you don't know what you're doing is everyone starts to give you advice and judge what you're doing and tell you you're doing the wrong thing, or you should, maybe they're not as direct as that, but indirectly they tell you that you could be doing this other thing. Yeah. And then you read all this advice that tells you you're not doing the right thing. You should be following this or following that. So it's quite hard, I feel, at that point to find a sense of self and a sense of certainty, because you feel like, even if it's not, even if you've got the most wonderful, kind people around you or no one around you, you feel perfectly judged for everything. Like I remember coming home feeling, and I'd let it get to me that someone in the supermarket had commented that Iris didn't have shoes on. Mm. And she never wore shoes. She didn't walk. I didn't see that she had to wear shoes. And it was hot. But still, even though I had that argument against it, I still came back and felt that my role as a mother had been judged.
Right.
And, I had to learn to feel okay with those things and learn to find a sense of self, which again I feel relates back to my yoga practice, and just let those comments wash off and not let them get to me, because they happen all the time. Sometimes people mean to be a little rude, sometimes they don't at all, but it's very easy when you're feeling a bit fragile to take it that way. So that's something like I had to keep coming back to my mindfulness practice to not let bother me.
Right. And the whole larger yoga ideas around identity as well, so that, you know, you shift into this other identity as mom, and just as you wanted to be good at what you were doing before, you want to be good at mom, and neither one of them is necessarily actually who you are. So
exactly. And you still want to be the person you were before you were a mom.
Right.
So yeah, that absolutely. It's made me realize more about myself than I thought I could. Like, I'm more like my mother than I ever thought I was. Mm. I have more gratitude towards my mother than I ever thought I would have. You know, I am sure many people can do this without becoming a mother. So, certain realizations came to me, like how much she cared for me and how much work she had to put in that I guess I'd never thought of until I was doing that work.
Yeah. When I went to visit my sister in Florida when her son was a toddler, I spent, you know, a handful of days down there, and I came home and immediately thanked my mother for raising me.
Yeah.
Because it was insane how much effort it took to pay attention.
Yeah. Well, even my dad, he came to stay with me for a month, two weeks when Iris was just born, when she was a month old. Uh-huh. And he spent time with me and he thanked my mom because he'd never realized, he was so busy working.
Wow.
He'd never realized like how hard it was for my mom.
Wow.
So until he saw me, maybe I made it look harder. She made it look easier.
I doubt that. Yeah.
I was thinking about it the other day because, you know, there are so many different ways you can parent and different things to do. And you have to trust the path you're going down and trust what you're doing is the right thing. And every time I sway from my intuition or my gut instinct, that's when I feel I do something wrong. When I listen to someone else as opposed to listening to what I think. And that's when I don't feel good about what I'm doing.
Yeah.
So I feel it's a very Ishta approach to parenting.
Yeah, well, and I think that the yoga practice and being able to tune into yourself in ways that you've described in the past as well. You know, it's like it lets you tap your own nature. You know, Mark Whitwell always talks about, you know, it's like your life itself. You know, you know how to do things just by virtue of what you are, you know, and you're a mom and but a lot of people are too much in their heads to be able to feel those things.
And it's very easy to be too much in your head because and anytime you look online, or it's so easy to look online or in books or for advice, we're not even, you know, I'm not even in a position, my mom's the other side of the world. So I'm not even in a position where I can ask her advice like so easily as I can Google it.
Right.
And you Google it and you get 100 different opinions and some of them are shouting at you.
Right.
So you have to step away from that and take a moment and choose what you want to do and be flexible with it.
Yeah. Sounds like yoga. Mm-hmm.
Yes, I think a lot of it is just like yoga.
Yeah. One of my favorite podcasts runs ads for the same thing over and over. Their delivery has become almost a joke. Get this, we're not using the other one anymore. I keep doing the same thing, but it's only one ad, and it's for me directly. Please go to patreon.com/peterspodcast and become a supporter of the podcast. It's easy, it's a bargain, it's important. Pause the podcast and do it now. I mean, please do it now. Thank you. On the other side of what you do, did, will do, continue to do. I don't know if people listening know that you helped me with my book, yoga for artists because you're an artist and a weaver and a fabric designer. And and I saw that you have a new loom.
I do. I do. I'm excited about that. I've just set that up. I kind of set it up in my living room so I could be around everything, but I had to baby fence myself in. So instead of we've always joked that we wouldn't put Iris in what we call a baby jail.
Yep.
But instead, I'm in a mum jail. which she's fascinated by, like all this new equipment keeps turning up because at the moment I'm procrastinating by buying new beautiful equipment. I am starting to weave again, which is nice on a nice scale. And I haven't got a huge amount of time to do it in with the way my schedule is at the moment, but I'm excited to do it. And I mean I've always thought like yoga so beautifully sits with weaving. If you haven't got the right mindset, it's monotonous and annoying practice.
Yeah, like tedious.
Yeah, right. Tedious. That's the word I was looking for. But if you can use it again as like a mindful practice, that's what you hear from like Navajo weavers. And, it's all about a mindfulness or spirituality built into how you weave and what you weave. And if you can think of it that way, as opposed to a tedious task, it can be quite a beautiful practice regardless of what you make at the end.
Yeah. Well, the word tantra implies this weaving through. It was a weaving word, as you know. And I think that looking at it from the other direction, that like what you're just saying, it's how do you bring that wisdom, intelligence, awareness in the moment living into everything. And like literally weaving, you just described so nicely, like it can be misery or it can be perfect.
Yeah. And it's one of those things that I think it appealed to me before I practiced yoga, like years and years before I practiced yoga. I decided to become a weaver as opposed to a printer, which was actually my more natural inclination was to draw and to be a printer. But I was so surprised I had the patience to weave and I could sit there and do it, or at that time it was stand there and weave, that I decided to do it because it was a bit more challenging. And it is a mindfulness practice in itself. You have to be mindful of what you're doing. You know, you can't lose track of it. You can't begin thinking of other things because that's when you'll make a mistake. Yeah.
Space out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. As soon as you start daydreaming or whatever, you're going to make a mistake and you're not going to realize it. And then you're going to be really annoyed that you have to go back and undo all that work you did.
Right.
So you have to stay in the moment with weaving.
Yeah. Could you give us a little like 1 minute description of how you weave? Like, what does it involve?
Okay. So tell me if I'm dumbing it down too much or the opposite. So you set up the warp, which are the vertical threads on the loom, which is a whole tedious task in itself. And even weavers would often say that's tedious. So you set up the warp, although I quite enjoyed it this time. And when you're weaving, you're passing a shuttle with some thread in it through the warp at a right angle. So that's the weft. So the weft intersects the warp.
And you go over and under and over and under.
So depending on what kind of loom you've got, and I've got a very little but electronic loom now, so I can program which threads lift up and down and when. And I control that with a pedal. But the thread will go under and over particular threads. The weft will go under and over particular warp threads to make the pattern.
Ah.
So the pattern could be as simple as a plane weave, which is like a canvas, mm-hmm. or it could be as simple as a twill, which is like your denim jeans, mm-hmm. or as fancy as like a jacquard woven or a tapestry that you would see in the Met or something. Mm. I always like to tell people that the first computer was a jacquard loop.
Yeah. So, wow. Yeah. That's awesome. So what are you weaving now?
Well, at the moment I'm just playing with my practice warp, which was good. Sometimes you need to practice before you do anything with fancy yarns, right. and expensive stuff. So at the moment I don't know, which is quite nice not having a plan. We'll see. I'm just seeing how it takes me. It's such a beautiful area of the country to be in for weaving because, you know, I went to Bandalay National Monument a week ago, and there the Pueblo people lived in these cave dwellings, and you can still see the holes from where the supports for their looms were in these cave dwellings. So this area has got such a rich history of weaving. It's such a nice place to be in. So I hope to buy some like local wool and see if I can integrate myself into some of that community as well.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. So I'd love to take some workshops with some of the weavers here. We'll see whether I don't have an infinite amount of time, but I like to pretend I do.
Right. And are the people that you're seeing, are they more Native Americans, or it's just like a whole collection of different people who are interested?
It's both. You do have the Navajo weavers and the Native American weavers. And I think just because the area of the country inspires that, you get a lot of people moving here who are artists as well. So yeah, there's a lot of good people to find out about. There's even a little weaving town called Chimeo, which is a couple of hours away. I haven't been to yet, but we drove past it the other day, so I'd like to
head there. What's a weaving town?
I don't know exactly. There's just a lot of weavers, I guess, and I know there's some hand weaving shops, workshops that are held around there. So maybe someone listening will know more than me, but it's an exciting area to be in, to be a weaver. So
that's fantastic. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm forever going to have to make you talk about your project that you did in your 300-hour teacher training, where you used weaving as a way of defining the densities of manifestation. That was fantastic.
Yeah, I was looking at that again because I came past it the other day. One day I will finish that and make it look really beautiful. But it was fun to do. And that's kind of, you know, it's so nice not having a job and having to design something that someone else is thinking about and design something purely for me. So I think I will go back to being a bit more conceptual in that way. Uh-huh. And as I say, yoga is such a natural partner for weaving in many, many ways that it's nice to look at that practice. And
so you might make something that's more of an object and not fabric per se.
Oh no, it could be fabric, but that is inspired by a concept.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. In the way that was.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Fantastic.
Yeah.
So what else is going on? What is the yoga world like in terms of the classes that you've been able to go to in Albuquerque?
Here, it's so different from San Antonio. In San Antonio, it wasn't saturated. Here, I guess because there's more of a like hippie, crunchy scene, and you've got the Ayurvedic Institute here in Santa Fe, not so far away. There's a lot of yoga teachers.
Is that Vasant Lad?
He's at the Ayurvedic Institute, and there's a few good studios that have teachers that come and do workshops, trainings, and things. It's like anywhere, varied quality of teachers, but I found some really good teachers. I teach at a lovely little studio that has every prop you could ever imagine, because there's a lot of yoga therapists here. Mm-hmm. So that's really nice. Very different to teaching in New York City.
How?
a big class is 12 people.
Uh-huh.
And it's a bit more serious. I have to channel my inner Peter to make some people smile. Uh-huh. I think I get that now. But yeah, and people are really happy to do a 15-minute Shavasana.
Uh-huh.
In that way, it's very different. People aren't so maybe looking for a workout.
Uh-huh.
People are looking for yoga, which, you know, that's not to say people are not looking for yoga in New York City, but as a rule, I feel people are coming for different, not so much for the fitness aspect,
right.
Which I'm not downplaying because that's where I came from.
Right.
That's why I came to yoga. So yeah, I noticed that. Yeah, but I like it. It's different. I miss New York. I miss my teachers there. Mm-hmm. I do miss that vibe. But it's nice here too.
Yeah. I haven't been there for a long time. Wendy and I will have to plan a trip.
Yes, you're welcome to visit whenever.
Yeah, thanks. We'll salute on our way in.
Yeah, it's interesting being on base at 5 o'clock. The national anthem goes off.
Oh, wow.
And I'm always still a bit, weirded out by what to do during it because
right.
I'm not yet American.
I think you're supposed to kneel on one knee with Colin Kaepernick.
Yes, exactly. Yes. Might not go down so well here.
Right.
Everyone stops their cars and stands. And
really?
Yeah. They have to. So it's interesting, but me being British, I don't feel I need to pledge my allegiance so much, but I also
right.
don't want to be rude.
So, right.
Yeah. It's interesting.
You have to learn what is the proper ally position.
Yes, exactly.
Right.
Exactly. It's all good. It's all good.
Well, cool. Mm-hmm. Well, we've been, getting ready to spend a summer in Europe.
I heard, yeah.
Yeah, so we're working on some workshops, probably going to do some things. Wendy's been working a bit with, sort of the psychology aspect of yoga, you know, of dealing with the stuff that comes up and that you maybe in your practice, whatever your practice components are, you know, there's always going to be challenges that show up and the yoga toolkit has many tools for addressing the different challenges. And she's been really focusing on that, like talking through component, working with subtle energy component. And so I think we'll probably have some aspect of that in whatever workshop she does. And
nice.
I'm still planning what I'm going to be doing, but our first bit in France, we're really looking to be a little bit outside the box in terms of a yoga retreat, where yes, we do some practice, you know, like a regular asana practice and a regular meditation practice, but really trying to have it conceptually work well as this notion of life is yoga.
Yes.
How do you live in ways that take that yoga into account, what you've been forced to do, you know, like how could people voluntarily make more of that move themselves?
Yeah. Well, I think it's, well, that's the yoga, isn't it?
Totally.
I'm not to downplay asana because asana is still like a really important thing to me, but it had to change my priority. Asana couldn't just be my yoga practice. My yoga practice had to be more than asana because otherwise it wasn't there.
It wasn't. Yeah.
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 So,
and I mean, that happens even when someone gets an injury, you know, like if they're thinking, yes. Oh, gosh, my practice is about how do I get to a handstand, and then suddenly you hurt your wrist or something like that. It's like either it's gone, you no longer have a practice, or your practice has to change. And because,
absolutely.
As you said earlier, change is the constant. You know, we always have to be looking for what is the essence of this way that we call yoga that gets confused with some you know, gymnastics thing.
Yeah, exactly. I was talking to one of my students the other day because he was feeling like he's plateauing in his yoga practice, because I think he's been practicing very consistently for about a year. And he has a very good, strong asana practice now, but he was feeling like he was plateauing. And there were some other students there at the same time who were at their third yoga class. And they're in awe of what he could do.
Right.
But, you know, he was kind of in awe of them being new and having that different approach to yoga. But yeah, you have to, you know, I was saying that to them, like your asana, it changes. It's not always going to be this like curve of, oh, one day I can't do handstand, then I can do handstand, then I can do handstand without the wall, and then I can press up into it. And it doesn't get better like that. So you have to let go of that expectation that you're going to improve all the time. You know, that your improvement might come in other ways.
Right.
It's not the steady growth.
Hi, I'm here taking you behind the scenes of Peter's podcast. I'm editing this episode and there's a break and I need to fill it. So here I am filling it. Wanted to remind you, subscribe to my podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, and then rate the podcast, and then become a supporter of the podcast on Patreon, and then come to France, come to see me in class, all kinds of fun ways that we can keep doing the yoga thing. Namaste. Yeah, I was just speaking with the current teacher training, the 300-hour group. We had a re-entry, and it's that midpoint where everyone's kind of overwhelmed, and you know, they have different judgments of how they're doing and how things are going, and are they going to get there, and things like that. And I said at the end of the circle, you know, that what we're doing here is practicing yoga, and we're doing this practice, and it's an energetic thing. And you being here with your teachers in this intensive way is a transmission of Shakti. And that's what the entire thing is about. Your mind is off on this whole story about what am I doing and what am I supposed to be reading and all of that. But the essence of what's happening is purely the doing.
Yeah,
that you are doing the practicing is what matters.
Yeah, and not those expectations or those goals or those judgments that want to hit you along the way.
Yeah,
you are just practicing.
Yeah, and all of the anything else that you do is just something that you're going to be working on over time, mm-hmm. whether it is a handstand or whether it is trying to stay calm when someone yells at you,
yeah.
or holding your identity when someone criticizes you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or having a sense of purpose when the ground shifts, you know?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So you've had quite the test case in your own life over the past few years.
Yeah. It was a dramatic shift. Yeah. And forever be thankful to the yoga studio I found in San Antonio and the friends I made through that place, because that really helped me feel at home.
Mm-hmm.
And feel that I had a place to go. So because I missed Istra so much,
yeah.
and I missed the other studio I taught at. I missed who I was. I missed that I had this good job for a good company. And I would find that I met people and I needed to introduce them as, but I used to do this.
Right.
But that's who I really am. And I realized I was doing that, and I've let go of it now. I've let go. I've learned to be content in what I'm doing. And, pleased with what I'm doing, which I was inwardly, but I felt that I had to impress people outwardly and be this person that wasn't just a mother.
Right.
Because that to me was not enough.
Yeah.
So those identities, it was becoming okay with, letting them go.
That is really the flip side, right, of this shift. Because, you know, mm-hmm. a generation ago, like my own mother, right? So I'm old enough, like a generation above you, but my mother was like a working woman mm-hmm. where like her siblings were just or only mothers mm-hmm. and housewife. That's such a weird word, housewife.
I know.
Housewives. but then she went back to her career. She got bored and went to her career. Mm-hmm. And now it's like so typical for women to have career. And it's so interesting to hear you say that it felt weird to just be the mother.
Yeah. Yeah. It definitely didn't feel enough. I felt like I needed to explain mm-hmm. myself.
To like justify.
Yeah. There's something else to me. I'm not just a mother, you mm-hmm. know? And of course, I'm not just a mother. Mm-hmm. Like, you're not just a yoga mm-hmm. teacher or just a husband. I became okay with that. And I realized that people weren't going to judge me as just a mother. And even if they were, who cares?
Right, right.
Yeah.
I did an art project, I don't know, a dozen years back probably at this point. But it was that in our society, because we're so market-based, it throws this bizarre value system on everybody based on mm-hmm. what does the market value it as. And so I had a lawyer and a fashion model and a athlete and all these things. And one of the careers that I had in there was mother. Mm-hmm. And there is literally no value in the marketplace at all for that.
No.
So it's not unusual that we would think it's not worth much to be a mother.
Yeah, right? Yeah, exactly.
Whereas exactly. being a fashion model, even though it has like, and it was great that when I did this project, I queried 50 people I knew and said, can you please rank these careers in terms of what you think their value is to society? And it was literally the inverse of what the pay typically is for those
really?
Fields because everybody of course felt the mother was incredibly important and teacher was incredibly important, you know?
Yes. Yeah. So. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we've got a lot of things backwards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's this new presidential candidate. There's this candidate for the 2020 presidential election, Andrew Yang. Mm-hmm. And he's a tech guy, Silicon Valley guy. Uh-huh. And he's promoting universal basic income as a way of helping people to transition because he sees that the nature of work itself is shifting so dramatically. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be no way for people to easily figure out, how do I work in this new world, in this world where so much stuff is automated and, you know, production is happening by machines and it's traveling internationally. And, you know, how are people going to figure out what to do? And so this is a part of a plan that part of a strategy. He says, we need a strategy to deal with this and no one's addressing it. And I think part of the strategy is we have to give this like baseline level of income to people so they have the freedom to move around and shift and study and all the things they need to do.
Absolutely. I would agree with that, but I do come from a more socialist country, not
right.
gradually getting less and less so, but
than
here. But yeah, I totally agree with that. Everything's changing. I mean, you think of like being a mother is a 24-hour job, but so many other jobs are turning into a 20, like, when does your day begin and end?
Yeah, you're on call.
My first job, exactly. My first job out of college was in a factory, and I literally clocked in and clocked it out. But, you know, my husband brings back every few weeks, he brings back a cell phone, which means he's the on-call psychologist at that point. And so, you know, and in the military, he can't even travel very far because he's essentially working even when he's not. So, but I feel that so many more jobs are becoming that way. That there's the way of working has of course got to be redefined.
Right.
Yeah.
So we'll see. It's pretty interesting times that we're in.
Yeah. Yes.
In both positive and negative ways. But yeah. That's the nature of living too.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I had your podcast with Jenny about that last week.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I keep trying to address it in class, you know, especially in meditation class where I have a little bit more time to speak about stuff. And, you know, I know that people are hearing just the news all the time and trying to provide some kind of counterbalance to all that depressing stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough.
Not to make light of it, but to have a way to deal with it.
I heard, it reminded me of what you were saying to Jenny. I heard Stephen Colbert on Oprah's podcast.
Yes.
And he was saying, you know, with him it was to do with the Catholic faith.
Yes.
But it was basically the same, to give compassion and to love everyone. And, you know, I think Oprah asked him.
And he's struggling like that.
Right? He said he wasn't necessarily a good Catholic, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Except that like yoga, it's a practice. You're just working at it.
Exactly. Yeah. And he was committed to it. And that's the thing is, going back to being a mother, that's one of the things I've realized about all these people trying to judge you or give you advice. It's the same. They all think they're doing the right thing.
Right.
And they are for themselves.
Yeah.
They're doing the right thing. And I just have to allow that and just, you know, let them be.
Yeah.
They're not doing anything wrong.
Right.
They think they're not doing anything wrong. I just have to, you know, that's what we're taught in yoga. I just have to react to it with my yoga practice.
Right. Right. Have a little more space and just respond. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's for the longest time I had found this picture of my parents when they were just dating, and it was so interesting because I had so much challenge with my parents growing up because they were so different. I was so different from them, and it was hard to get them to understand what I was doing and what my motivations were and why I wasn't doing the things that they thought were the proper things that one does, you know, to grow up and live and find work and all of that stuff. And when I found this photograph of them, and when I found it, I was already older than they were in this picture. It was so enlightening that they were just doing the best they knew how to do.
Yeah.
And that was incredibly freeing. Like, I could forgive them at that point, you know, that they were just trying.
Yeah.
What did they know? You know?
Yeah, exactly.
They're just doing the best they knew, you know? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's all we are doing. And you put it so well that it's when you see someone else telling you what to do, having that compassion to know they just think they're doing the right thing by telling you is also very helpful.
Yeah. Well, it's the only way I can deal with it. I still have some, you know, it's not perfect. It still do let it get to me sometimes, but I just have to go back to that thought and be like, that, you know.
Yeah. Don't have to listen to that.
Yeah. I don't have to listen. They have every right to say it if they want. And I can just agree that that's right for them. It's Ishta parenting.
Yes, exactly.
It's not the same for everyone.
Exactly.
We all do our own thing.
Yeah.
We all do the best we can.
Yeah. And speaking of the best you can, how much teaching are you getting to do?
I am teaching a lovely class once a week at the
That's
moment.
Awesome.
Yeah, I've toyed with teaching a little bit more. I've been in touch with some studio owners here. Everything's a little slower here, which is nice. I teach a really nice class once a week. They've let it. The studio owner she owns the studio as a passion project, really, and lets everyone teach how they feel they teach. She doesn't try and mold the studio to be anything, which is really lovely. So I teach a 90-minute class where I teach a lot of pranayama through asana and end with some meditation.
Nice.
So yeah, I really enjoy it, and I enjoy still teaching, and it does give me that moment where I'm not a mother first.
Right.
just for that, those 90 minutes, I'm not, you know, I haven't got those responsibilities.
Yeah.
So
that's awesome. Do you have any advice for our current 300-hour trainees or anybody who's just done their training recently?
Oh, well, in terms of, you know, one of the things I was really scared of when I started teaching, and this was after my 200, before I'd even done my 300, was teaching pregnant people. Mm. And so I would suggest, in terms of that, because you're always going to get someone pregnant, and I hope you're not going to freeze like I did and then run back and read every book and every article you can. So try and do it before. If you know any pregnant people, ask them. You know, that I learned a ton about asana practice while I was pregnant through my own practice and through my friend's practice. So just on the topic of motherhood and pregnancy, that's something that really freaked me out when I started teaching. So don't let it freak you out.
Stay off that belly.
Otherwise, enjoy it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And no twists. But and make friends with Gina. Otherwise, enjoy it. Like I so wish I could do my 300 hour again. Mm-hmm. I know it's intense and it's a lot of stuff, but enjoy being around those people. Enjoy making that connection. Enjoy being around your teachers. I'm jealous.
And I didn't pay you to say all of this, right?
No, not at all. I'm jealous every time I hear someone taking the teacher training. I'm like, oh, I'll do it again. I have to come over to Albuquerque and
train some people. That's perfect. That's a great idea.
Yeah. And I can sit in and learn it all again.
Yeah, you can assist.
Yes, I would love to.
There you go.
Oh,
cool. Well, great. Well, it's been so great talking with you.
Yeah, well, it's been lovely talking with you.
And good luck with your teaching, and good luck with Iris and life on the base and everything else.
Thank you. I've got a whole new practice coming up ahead, because she's starting to have tantrums now. So that's going to be a whole new mindfulness challenge.
Right.
So, yeah, but thank you.
Yeah. All right. Well, namaste.
Namaste.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Rebecca. I'm one of many who miss seeing her in the yoga studio. You can see her illustrations in my book, Yoga for Artists. And I'll put a link in the show notes for the studio where she's teaching in case you're visiting Albuquerque. Take care. See you next time. Namaste.
The law of France.